Hello and welcome to Databook. I am Jack Murtha.
And I am Tom Castles. Databook is an inside digital health podcast.
You can check us out online, that's idigitalhealth.com, or on any of your favorite social media outlets.
And if you're a fan of Databook, never forget, it's always a great time to rate, subscribe, and review.
So today's episode is a pretty special one. This is actually part one of a two-part episode.
And that is a first for Databook.
So why are we doing this? Why, with everything going on in healthcare and tech, are we devoting two whole episodes to a single story?
Well, as always, this two-parter comes with a few lessons that can help healthcare innovators. But it's also just a damn good story.
Yes, and we wouldn't have this story without our friend Charisse Maynard. So Charisse, thanks.
Yep, thank you kindly. And here's what we're thanking Charisse for. Today on Databook, we're bringing you the story of a bright-eyed, up-and-coming entrepreneur. In 1998, she had a couple million bucks in VC backing. By early 2000, though, all that funding had dried up. So within a few months, she had put her website up for sale, changed the locks on the office doors, and kind of watched as the dream just withered away.
So about a month ago, I caught up with this person and her story. Wow. All right, it's crazy. Look, her name is Gail Zotz, and her company was called Working Weekly. And if you did your math, you might already know this. But Gail was both a beneficiary and a victim of the dot-com bubble.
Working Weekly was all about boosting the health. We're talking about mental, physical, emotional health of the American worker.
Now, this might not sound like it was a tech company in terms of how we think about the industry today. But back in the late 90s, the thought of a digital media outlet, well, yeah, that in itself was pretty high tech.
And Gail's vision, connecting advertisers to a go-getter, high-value audience whose members were in need of real help, that still rings true with many of today's tech entrepreneurs.
And for a little bit, Gail was living the kind of life that we probably imagine to be fitting of modern social networking app developing gurus. She was on CNN, she was featured in Entrepreneur Mag, she was watching Tiger Woods play golf. She even made an appearance on the Today Show.
And I remember being in the green room on the Today Show, and there was another entrepreneur who was not a guest, but was giving a check during the walkthrough when they go outside to the audience. And he's giving his elevator pitch to everyone else, right? So Ginger, the actress who played Ginger on Gilligan's Island, was on that day, and Rosie O'Donnell was on that day. And a boy had just been saved from the waters of being rescued from Cuba that day. And there we are talking about how we're going to change the world with this new idea of the internet and how that plays out and how and why that matters.
So yeah, Gail Zotz was the head of a really exciting dot-com. She had 65 employees, a million or so subscribers to her personal column. She had everything in front of her, until she didn't.
But look, it's not all doom and gloom. It turns out that we can actually take something from this little ripple along the dot-com bubble. And that's why Gail agreed to talk to us in the first place.
I think we learned so much more from the areas where we were not successful. There is a deep level of a pain point of memory that helps us understand what did not work. And unfortunately, too many people view that as failure and therefore do not share those important lessons with colleagues and others within the industry. And I think that that is a critical mistake. Because nobody became successful at anything by not trying and failing.
Today on Databook, the story of a startup that went bust and what it might offer to healthcare's digital transformation. Gail Zotz was the kind of kid who had to be destined for something huge. She led her first project at age 15. This group was trying to put together a camp for disadvantaged kids, and they'd been failing to get it off the ground for years. Then Gail came in and said, hey, give me a shot.
And they thought, well, it's already failed, so what could she do? And two months later, we had raised $100,000 and created the camp and created all the partnerships and gotten all of the donors and created and mapped out how to do this camp that I then went on to do my first video production for in terms of the video, and was speaking in front of 5,000 people before I turned 16 as a case study and how this had worked. It was duplicated in 48 states. I'm mentioning that just because the bug for what we can do to advocate real change was there always.
From there, Gail went on to college. Then she graduated and began working on Capitol Hill. She was advocating for change on behalf of big healthcare campaigns. She was in communications, and she was making some pretty key connections.
Eventually, Gail had her first kid. She wanted to change in her own life. She wanted some kind of work-life balance.
And funnily enough, she chose to do that by starting her own healthcare communications and advocacy firm.
Yes, there's tranquility for you.
Yeah, but she does get several clients almost as soon as she opens the door. And before you know it, she's working on sprawling campaigns to reduce the stigma of mental illness. She's organizing 30 agency, public-private efforts to get jobs for people with disabilities.
And at the same time, she became a freelancer for some big news agencies, covering healthcare and all of its twists and turns.
So Gail was playing on both sides of the media. She's an entrepreneur who's organizing and advocating, and she's a 20-something mom who's raising a baby.
And then, in 1998, this happens.
One of my clients came to me quite literally on a paper napkin and said, if you had some money, what would you do with it? I said, how much? So I said, well, let's say we start with $800,000 and we cap it somewhere around $2 million. Tell me what you would do. So literally, I sat down and did a business plan quite literally on a napkin while we're out and said, here's what I do. Here's what's really interesting and what's going on. We weren't calling it digital then. I mean, this is when we were doing what was called bricks and clicks, what people now refer to as the internet bubble. We were trying to look at how to take traditional media and new media. This is when websites were $1 million, a website that you can put up for free in a day now, when I was paying $4,000 for a T1 line and needing multiple T1 lines to come in. It's amazing how much change has occurred in such a short lifetime. So I laid it out, and within the week, we had gone to the bank and I had incorporated and had created the foundation.
That was the birth of Working Weekly. Like Gail said, it had a traditional print media element, but it was also super high tech and, frankly, big. She even had a CTO and a CIO.
Working Weekly grew out of a project that Gail did for the Department of Labor, the one about paving a path to employment for people with disabilities. The government wanted to reach HR managers, people like that, and part of the message included resources for employees' mental health. That really resonated with Gail.
It was a success. That little kernel of change told Gail that she could reach decision makers and maybe, just maybe, make the workplace a healthier, happier place. And that will be good for employees and their employers.
The idea for Working Weekly was most people are workers, they'll make up the audience.
And most companies want good employees, they'll be the primary long-term advertisers.
So all of a sudden, Gail has the money to make this happen on a larger, more impactful scale than that one-off conference and resource guide. In fact, she has $1.8 million in startup funding.
And with that, she joined the ranks of the dot-com boom.
It was an incredible time. It was an unbelievable time. We had these really bright, excited people that were my peers in other companies. You do understand that we grew up where we got a Commodore 64. You know, I mean, there was no internet. There was no, this was all new. This was the moon. This was the new place to explore. This didn't exist, and we watched it exist. And we were young, most of us were very young, and we were incredibly optimistic and enthusiastic. And that was all terrific.
And in less than 6 months, Working Weekly had a huge office in Charlottesville, Virginia. 60 employees and expenditures of $250,000 per month.
When Working Weekly was getting off the ground, it was all about getting eyeballs. You see, Gail was already a writer with a big, loyal following, but her new digital media outlet, this brand, it had to make a name for itself. It needed to grow its market share.
Once again, that belief was similar to how tech companies of all backgrounds think today, and really for the past 20 plus years. Develop this platform or this system, build up the user base, and then the profits will come. Adoption at all costs in the hope of someday recouping those costs.
Gail, who years later became an early health IT fixture on Twitter, said this false security in the metrics persists today.
For me, it's always been about the story. But if you talk to people, if you see them promoting now on social media, they are all about their follower count. I have X number of people following me. And I will challenge that with how many relationships do you have?
But here's the thing. During all of this obsessive brand building, Gail was building relationships. And she was having a hell of a time doing it.
She was traveling all over the country, flying into New York City, the Bay Area, wherever. And she was meeting with vendors, potential partners, reporters, and of course, other dot-com visionaries.
Gail puts it all like this.
If you're willing to gamble everything, if you're willing to take these risks, there's something incredible that happens while you're doing that.
So here's what we're getting at. Gail's time running Working Weekly coincided with a major boom in American economic history. There were a bunch of people doing some really interesting things, and some of them got to know each other. And before she knew it, Gail was actually witnessing news, real memorable news, firsthand. All thanks to her efforts to build this brand.
Take this for example. She got to know some of the people at Enron. And yes, we're talking about that Enron. And they actually took her to the Masters, that big golf tournament.
I'm on my way preparing, and I turn to one of my team members. I'm like, so is the Masters a big deal? And he was a golf junkie. And he says, yes, it is. Why, are you going? I said, yeah, I think it'll be fun. And so I go and I pick up a golf club for the first time ever in Augusta. And we're there for like a week and we're playing golf. Major money was lost over my inability to play and won by other people because they're betting on whether I could hit every shot, whether I'll make it over the water or not. And then I got to see Tiger Woods play.
Gail's role even placed her in the room when one of the networks announced that they were going to try out a little thing called reality TV.
It was a banking meeting, and they were talking to their investors. And I said, yeah, so this fall we're putting on our program this concept of reality TV. We think it's really going to make a difference. And again, all of us are sitting in the audience going, huh, that's interesting.
Okay, all right. So all of this is really cool, right? They're really good stories for a happy hour or maybe a networking event. But that's not all this is about. Gail's stories say a lot about this particular time in history and how she and Working Weekly fit into the picture.
Here I am, a 20-something young mom right, who actually believed that I was on the cusp of affecting real and lasting change. That the workplace was where we could touch the most amount of lives, and that this incredibly exciting space called the internet was going to enable us to change lives in a much bigger way.
It was unbridled ambition and optimism. This new thing called the internet was going to change everything and seemed like it was shaking up the entire establishment. I mean, think about it. All of a sudden, you have these new disruptors, and they're not just taking a seat at the table. They've kind of built their own table.
Nowadays, in health tech, we see that going on a lot. We've got AI, ML, VR, wearables, apps that boost wellness and bring in new streams of real-world data, even direct-to-consumer genetic tests. It's coming from legacy tech companies who are never in healthcare and young, hungry startups. There's just so much going on, and it's all such a leap from the legacy tech that hospitals have really gotten to know.
And these new health tech visionaries, well, they're heralded in much the same way as Gail and her contemporaries were. They're going to crazy parties, they're often in the room for these game-changing decisions and announcements. And these health IT innovators are also successfully capturing huge VC dollars to fight their way through an increasingly crowded and pretty confusing market.
Now, look, we're not gonna argue that a new media venture faces the same challenges and benefits as, I don't know, a company whose AI diagnostic system has received FDA clearance. Clearly two different things. But there is also a clear similarity between the hype of the dot-com bubble and the hype of this health tech boom. And maybe that's cause for everyone in healthcare to just remember to be a little bit more cautious.
Even though working weekly was considered a high-tech dot-com, its plan for making money was pretty simple. Ad dollars. The same source of revenue that had sustained companies like the New York Times for years and years, but all done digitally. The money in print advertising had always come from classified ads, and Gail had an idea of how to replicate that.
Because the readers were employees who were focused on improving their workplace health, the advertisers would be companies that were hiring. It's kind of a no-brainer, right? And this made it even better. Some companies were always hiring, and that meant that they would always be recruiting.
So this is Working Weekly's sell. Sign a one-year contract with us. The right kind of worker will grow to associate your company with our mission, that's better workplace health, and you are going to sign on top talent.
Only it was not that easy. During this time, remember, Gail was focused on growing the brand, getting eyeballs. She did not set her sights on sales. Even though she was the one who dreamt up Working Weekly and secured the initial money to make it happen.
Gail hired a sales director who didn't buy into the long-term contract model. The company ended up signing a lot of one-off deals instead, and those just weren't sustainable. Not with $250,000 that Working Weekly was spending to keep the lights on every month.
Gail didn't come from finance. She didn't have an MBA. And at some point, she pulled aside her CFO and said, hey, explain these numbers, these five-year projections to me.
And he says, oh, it's very complicated. You don't have a finance background. I said, I'm paying you $10,000 a month to put them together. You can do me the honor of spending an hour explaining to me what it is that I'm paying for. So he spends an hour, true story, he spends an hour explaining to me the pro formas and the assumptions and the what we're looking at when we're laying out a year and 5 years. And so I said, wait a second. So we make assumptions that are stories. That these are stories that we tell that are based on ideas that we believe to be true, but do not actually have factual evidence.
This five-year projection and these assumptions, they were nothing more than a story, just like the kind that Gail used to write for the newspaper. And that really bugged her.
And so I said to him, I said, we're building a house of cards. We're hoping that we're going to get to the end. And this is when I was in the middle of it, when it was very exciting and we believed 100% that it was going to work.
And why wouldn't it work? The innovation and the growth, they were supposed to come at the same time as the monetization strategy. It wasn't some neat line from A to B. It was a dot-com. It was a startup.
Gail's peers at other startups were all planning for IPOs. There was a lot of talk about exit strategy, and that was the finish line, creating something and cashing it in.
But here's what was missing.
That was not a real finish line. The finish line should have been, could have been, what are we creating that is of long-term value? And how are we making that sustainable as an organization?
How many health tech companies are doing the same thing right now in 2019? We don't know, but it's a safe bet that some vendors are just here for that glorious exit. And that makes the job of health system decision makers particularly hard. How can you trust any of these fresh startups?
Is it an FDA clearance, the body and quality of research into their solution? Do you check out use cases? Maybe you ring up a friend at another hospital and ask for their endorsement? What about your physicians and what they say they need in the clinic and their workflows?
Or are you relying on the startup's marketing? Maybe it's their booth at HIMSS, their bought and paid for conference discussions? Are you looking too closely at their partnerships with bigger tech vendors and their VC funding?
Because here's the deal. Doctors and patients, they don't need their healthcare leaders to buy a dream. They need you to buy the tools that will lead to better outcomes and a better hospital.
Gail Zotz had just done yet another media junket in New York when she got the call. It was her comptroller. It was urgent. Gail had to bring in more money now.
So I went to our initial investor and he said, I'm done. He said, I've given you what I'm going to give you. Now go find somebody else.
But it wasn't over yet. Gail flew out to Houston where she met with another investor. They were talking about a $5 million deal. That would have been more than enough to save Working Weekly and Gail's vision.
I have the lawyers draw up all the paperwork. She has her lawyers there. I have on the phone our accounting people. She has her accountant there. We're literally at a dining room table. This is the truth.
The folders were open. The paperwork was all there. They were just about to close the deal when...
The phone rings. Her attorney answers the phone. NASDAQ has just crashed.
What happened next for Gail Zotz and her dot-com startup? Databook will return on Friday, June 14th with the rest of this story. And more on what healthcare can learn from all of this.
Until then, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review, and check us out online at iDigitalHealth.com. You can also follow Inside Digital Health on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook.
Until next time, I'm Jack Murtha.
And I'm Tom Castles.
And this is Databook.